Hello and welcome to another edition of Medical Minds Conversations with Guthrie Experts. I'm Steve Ostrous, joined by Dr. Corinne Johnston. And Dr. Johnston, you probably already know this, but it is Move More Month, the month of April.
Yeah, we all can move more, myself included. I think it's a good month.
It is a good month, right? And kind of with the weather changing, I mean, depending on where you live, it's been up and down. But the idea is maybe we can get outside more. And I did go outside this weekend.
Okay.
But then I went right back inside because I was in a dance competition. I was watching a dance competition.
There you go.
Let me clarify. My daughter had a dance competition. So I spent my entire time sitting in an auditorium watching a lot of movement, but doing none of it myself.
Yeah. And that's so easy to do, Steve. I mean, I think if I reflect on my weekend, it was rainy where I live. So that was a good excuse for me to just stay inside. I had work to do. That was a good excuse for me to stay inside. But I definitely could do more.
Yeah, I think so. Maybe what we do before we get to our guest, we challenge one another.
Okay.
And how can we move more in the month of April? I guess past the month of April too, but I get, you know, baby steps, right?
Okay. Baby steps. I'm gonna have to ask some questions about how I'm going to do this and how I'm going to recover.
Right. Yeah, exactly. All right. So we'll hold ourselves to it and, you know, we'll talk about it on the next episode and see how we did.
Sounds great.
All right. We're excited to have our guest joining us now. And she is Kim Bowers, who is an exercise physiologist with Guthrie, as well as a personal trainer. Kim, thanks for being here today.
Thank you so much for having me, Stephen and Dr. Johnston. I'm excited to be here today to talk more about the American Heart Association and Move More Month.
Move More Month. I think we can all move a little bit more. You know, it's clear that it seems nowadays, and we'll get to this, the amount of movement I have for a meeting is just rearranging my camera slightly so I can set it up. But could you talk a little bit about just kind of, I guess, talk about like what does sedentary mean, right? When we hear that term, maybe we'll start on the baseline with that.
Yeah, so the term sedentary has become a lot more relevant today, I think, especially ever since COVID and the pandemic, people are just sitting a lot more. So sedentary is defined by any activity that requires little to no movement and an energy expenditure of resting level. So examples of this are sitting at your desk, sitting and watching TV. Another one is like sitting and driving in the car. Anything where you're not expending any energy is what sedentary lifestyle is.
And I think you hear a lot, at least on my end, I'm sure you do. Well, I move a lot at work, but most of the movements we do at work, I guess it's depending on your job, probably fall a little bit into that sedentary. Like if I'm walking up and down a hall at a regular pace to see a patient, is that very exercise forward?
So that brings up another good common question of people is what's exercise versus physical activity? Mm-hmm. A lot of people group those terms together. Physical activity is any bodily movement where we're contracting our muscles, but it's not as structured, repetitive, and gets your heart rate up as much as exercise does. So examples of physical activity, like you mentioned, could be things you're doing at work, could be your activities of daily living around your house, chores that you do, transportation-wise, like if you're walking to the grocery store or walking to get to work, that's kind of physical activity. And then exercise adds a little bit of a higher intensity. It's structured, and the goal of exercise is ultimately to improve some component of your physical fitness.
I wouldn't expect you to have, you know, hard data or numbers in front of you, but how often do people come your direction, you know, in either role, whether as an exercise physiologist or a personal trainer, and you find that they're assuming that this physical activity is enough and that they are exercising?
I would say that's in the majority. commonly I'll get a patient or a client and they'll say, well, you know, I work in cardiac rehab, by the way. So a lot of what I reference will be related to that. So let's say they had a heart attack and they come in and they're like, it was kind of a shock. I didn't expect this. I work, you know, I'm on my feet all day at work and just came out of the blue. And then I'll ask more in terms of, have you regularly exercised? Do you meet the like standards and guidelines for exercise? Have you lifted a weight in X amount of years? And oftentimes the answer is no. I thought, you know, my job or what I do around the house, I thought that was enough.
Mm-hmm. You know, count me as one of those people, because I assume that as I'm walking through the halls of our hospitals, that I'm getting lots of steps. I'm like, this is fantastic. I'm getting lots of exercise. But then I guess I should have come to the realization, because on those occasions when I do exercise, I do find that, you know, suddenly there's soreness that I wasn't getting when I was just walking around, you know, getting my steps.
Right, right. And so one thing that the American College of Sports Medicine and American Heart Association talk about is there's four kinds of people. So you can either be someone who's sedentary all the time, never physically active, never exercises. That's the worst case scenario for your health and wellness. You can be someone who's physically active, does, you know, chores, activities of daily living, might have an active job, but never regularly exercises or ups that intensity. And then we have what's called a sedentary exerciser. And this is kind of a new phenomenon that, you know, people didn't realize that this is also kind of bad for your health still, but people who maybe they do a 30-minute workout every day, but then they're sitting the rest of the time. Mm-hmm. Maybe they go for their 30-minute brisk walk or 30 minutes at the gym, and then the rest of the time they're at home watching TV. Maybe they sit in the car a lot, have to drive a lot for work. So that's a sedentary exerciser. And then ultimately the ideal situation would be you're someone who is physically active, sits down as the least amount of time as possible, and also is adding in exercise throughout the day.
Yeah. And go over those. You had talked a little bit about those exercise guidelines. So what are we looking at? If I'm completely sedentary, what do I got to do?
So this is agreed upon through the American College of Sports Medicine and the American Heart Association. They recommend, just for the average general population, an adult in the U.S., at least 150 minutes per week of moderate intensity activity, or 75 minutes per week of more of a vigorous, higher intensity activity. And then within those minutes per week, you want to have at least 2 days where you do some sort of resistance or strength training to load your muscles and your bones.
All right. So at first I was thinking, I'm one of those, sedentary exercisers. And I'm like, I was trying to cheat a little bit and thinking I'm doing a good job. But when you talk about the numbers, it's really not that much time, right? 150 minutes over an entire week.
Right.
I mean, so I'm sure for somebody who never exercises, it's a little bit of a leap to get there, but it doesn't seem like too much to handle, right?
Right. So that's like the bare minimum, the 150 minutes per week. They say if you're, you know, maybe your goal is weight loss, going up to 300 per minutes a week would be more of the ballpark of where you want to be. For people who are sedentary currently, even just doing something more than what they've been doing, not even meeting the 150 minutes, but maybe you get like half that time, that can produce health benefits for someone who's been currently sedentary.
I think you see a lot of that, right? Is with the advent of smartwatches, you know, like, oh, I got my 10,000 steps today. But I think we also expect as humans, we're like, why am I not losing weight? I got my 10,000 steps.
Right. And it's funny, I just read something about, you know, the counting the steps per day and the smartwatches. And the thing is, getting more steps is great. That means you are being less sedentary, but you also can't measure the intensity you're working at those steps.
Yeah.
What if you're walking around Disney World with children? I think those steps would be a little bit more energy.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And again, so with all this conversation, the goal is not to take away from the importance of physical activity. That is so important. And then once you are physically active, it's just adding in more exercise.
So obviously we talked about it with COVID and the world really kind of being turned upside down and changing. How difficult is it in your role to kind of flip the script and get people to go back to where they were? And it's not like we were perfect when it came to exercise before COVID. Certainly we had our issues as a society, but how difficult is it to change that mindset back?
So as a common trend, we've seen actually physical activity and people meeting those guidelines slightly increase throughout the years. And then once COVID hit, it dropped back down a little. So right now, only about, I think it's 22.5. I have the exact stat memorized, but 22.5% of Americans are meeting both the aerobic and the resistance training pieces to the guidelines. So we've seen it drop back down a little bit with COVID. And honestly, another thing I've noticed in my line of work is it's a lot of the older generations too that didn't really grow up with the idea that exercise is for everybody, exercise is for your health. It was, I think, more of a focus on, you know, exercises for the athletes or for the bodybuilders. It's to get big muscles. And we know now and have more access to information now that that's not the case. You know, exercise is for everybody. It's just for your general health. As we get older, being able to maintain our function and maintain our independence.
Yeah, I think that's a great point, right? Sometimes with my elderly patients, it's so that you can get up if you fall, right? Mm-hmm. Because of that risk that we see. So talk a little bit about that, like, shift as we hit kind of senior citizen or maybe the woman that becomes postmenopausal, why those things are so important.
Yeah. So actually, as I was doing more research into kind of the general trend of our functional capabilities and our independence, it's actually looking like it's even closer to our 40s and 50s that we start to see that decline in muscle mass, decline in our muscular strength, especially for the postmenopausal women, the bone density. And, you know, we start losing all of that earlier than you would think. So it's really important to start as early as you can, increasing your functional and your aerobic capacity and your muscular strength while you're younger, so that as you get older, you can maintain what you have for longer and see less steep of a quick decline in your functional capabilities.
Well, as I quickly approach the big 5-0, I am very disappointed to hear that I have been misled thinking that 50 is the new 40. Apparently, I'm already a decade behind when it comes to making sure I'm ready for this.
Now, that you bring up a good point, though. Like, 50 is the new 40 if you've been exercising. You can, like, biologically and physiologically have the capacity of someone a decade younger than you if you've been exercising. And that's why age really is just a number.
Yeah.
I think I'll have to ask my wife and kids to think if I'm a 40-year-old in a 50-year-old's body.
We're not talking about your maturity, Steve. We're talking about your physical activity.
Okay. I'm going to be very scarred by the end of this episode.
So what are things like, I think, right, there was the couch to 5K fad, right? I think that's been around for a long time. But what are things we can do that may not be, I'm going to go to the gym for an hour, that we can start to do to make ourselves more active?
Yeah. So I think that is one of the biggest barriers for people is they make exercise more complicated than it needs to be. You know, you don't have to have a gym membership. You don't even have to have any equipment available at all. You just need yourself. So some simple things I say, like, if you do have a desk job and let's say you do have to sit down, you know, you can march in your seat. You can do seated stretches. You can set a timer on your phone for 30 minutes every 30 minutes. If you haven't got up, go walk down the hall and back. If you are able to have like a standing desk, like mine right now, I'm standing up. Mm-hmm. That's great. You can also they make little like foot cycles or under the desk ellipticals now that are great if you do have to sit at work.
I was going to ask about those. I've seen many an infomercial for those little foot cycles. I was going to ask you if that counts, if that's good for you.
Yeah. So anything where you are working your muscles, getting your heart rate up, working above that resting energy level, that is going to be beneficial. And then also some other tips, like for people at home, let's say, you know, you're having one of those days, you're just tired. You want to be a couch potato and watch a whole series on Netflix. Well, you know, maybe every commercial break, get up, go do something. There's plenty of seated exercises. You can just look up on YouTube now that you can do right in your seat. You can buy a cheap pair of dumbbells, hand weights. You can do curls. You can do presses, you know, while you're sitting down. So that's the great thing about technology now is there is access to all that information. The downside of technology now is that it's more of a constant temptation for people to always be on their phone or, you know, looking at a computer screen at the television. But I like to say, let's try to use it to our benefit. And if you are someone who's like a beginner exerciser, it's really easy now to just Google, you know, beginning exercises, chair exercises, 5-minute workout. And actually the American Heart Association on their website under their fitness tab, they have like 5-minute quick workouts you can do at your desk, in your chair. So there's all that information out there for people.
Yeah. So not to just pick on Steve, I'll throw myself out there too. So I coach my daughter's softball team and they're young. They're like 8 to 10. And every year when I do that, I am so sore. Like, it's ridiculous. I like pitch and I'm like, oh my gosh, my entire leg. Like, what are things that we can do to combat that? Because I think that's probably one of the deterrents, the way we feel the next day. Is it stretching? Like, what other things should we be doing?
Right. So with muscle soreness, this is a very interesting topic. So stretching and like flexibility exercises, there's no conclusive research that says that actually prevents soreness.
One thing to check off my list then. I don't need to.
So muscular, like the soreness, or known as like delayed onset muscular soreness. So what that really is as our muscles are contracting and those fibers are contracting, they're breaking apart is what's happening. So the delayed onset soreness that you're feeling, you know, that's normal. That's just a process that you've worked those muscles. There's a stimulus on them that's greater than what was there before. And that's kind of them signaling to themselves like, hey, we need to become stronger in order to maintain that next time. Some things you can do for recovery that help, just staying hydrated is very key. A lot of my patients have found like ice or heat can help like reduce inflammation. I will say if you are, you know, like if for your softball practice, if you know you're going to be doing a lot more exercise, dynamic warm-ups have been found to help with improving your performance for an exercise that's about to happen. So doing a dynamic warm-up with your team, even that can also help.
And when you
say
hydrate,
get to take that off your list. You have to, it's not stretching, but you have to do a dynamic warm-up. So.
You're going to be sore. It's kind of inevitable, but I like to think of it as I did something. And, you know, that's a reminder that I, you know, it's working.
Yeah. And hydration is with water, right? Not soda.
Correct. Water.
Water. I think that's a thing as well, right? Like, are you drinking? Oh, I drink, you know, lots of juice, lots of soda, but water.
Yeah.
What about
coffee?
Drink plenty of that. What about, and I know I'm kind of going on a tangent here, but what about like the Gatorades and those sports drinks? I mean, obviously water is still the best no matter what, right? I'm assuming.
Yeah. Water is, I mean, water is the staple. So with the Gatorade and the sports drinks, and I'm not like a nutrition expert in any way, but in terms of like cardiac patients, if we've learned about reading the food labels and looking at, you know, sodium content, those have a lot of sodium. Because the goal of them is for people who are sweating out all of, you know, those salts to replenish those. And if you're someone who, you know, you're not working that hard, you're not working up the sweat, I don't recommend those for our patients who maybe have high blood pressure, and they're trying to limit their sodium intake for the rest of the day. But, you know, for athletes and people who are exerting themselves, sweating a lot, then that is a great way to rehydrate.
Yeah. I know, Kim, you're focusing and your work is with adults, but we obviously read in the news, right, that pediatric obesity is a problem. And, you know, what are things we can do to the parents that are listening to get our kids moving, or how much should they be moving?
So kids should be moving even more than adults. Some considerations that might be different than the adult guidelines. With kids, you really want to focus on any sort of movements that can stimulate bone growth. So think of just like playing on the playground. They do a lot of jumping, a lot of climbing. So they're in their way doing their own kind of resistance or strength training to load their bones and their muscles. Mm-hmm. And then as a general guideline, I don't know if you've heard of like the Play 60 movement, but getting at least 60 minutes of exercise a day, encouraging your kids to go outside and play rather than get on their tablet or watch, you know, video games as soon as they get home from school, where they've also been sitting a lot already. I think that schools could do an even better job about, you know, giving kids a longer recess or doing exercises before kids have to sit down to, you know, learn an hour long lesson, and just, you know, breaking up the sitting time as you can. And then also, you know, trying to make things game-like or like it's a game can give kids like a positive correlation with exercise. It's really important when kids are younger to, you know, get them to like exercise, because that's going to help them sustain those habits for their whole life.
So I guess I just need to hit up the trampoline in the backyard with my daughter. You know, I'll be.
Yeah. No, people actually do a lot of trampoline, you know, exercises now.
I'm an example for my daughter of saying, okay, you see your dad, so now you want to go ahead and exercise and make sure that you can. I'm just kidding. But,
well, yeah, and that's the point.
But she, you know, she just used as an example is constant, always moving, you know, in multiple sports, dancing constantly, multiple nights a week. So, you know, she has that down. But I think I see that a lot. And I guess this speaks to the fact that the 40s and 50s and older generations are those who really need to kind of change their lifestyles a bit more, because I find that some kids, at least those who are participating in these activities, now in the schools, there have weightlifting sessions and all these different activities that when I was participating in sports when I was younger, those things just weren't an option, at least not involved with the school. You can certainly do them on your own.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And they're promoting more of that. And I also think as a, I'm not a parent, but if you are a parent, you know, when you talk about exercise with your kids, say, you know, I'm going to lift weights so that I'm stronger so that I can keep up with you one day. And, you know, teaching them about why you do exercise is really important, especially if you have like a young daughter, making sure to not talk about it as, you know, I'm trying to lose weight, or view it as more of like the things that you gain from exercise.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's such a great point, right? Body image. And I think, you know, we get so tied to a number sometimes, or like a pant size, that we can't see all the other added benefits. I think like you're talking about, right, with the strength and bones. So keeping strong bones, especially in women. And then even like better sleep, right? Or more serotonin, which is great for our mental health. Like there are those benefits that aren't at all related to our muscle mass.
Right. Like I'll have patients who complete their cardiac rehab program. Maybe they didn't lose any weight, but they can tell me I have more energy. I'm not tired after doing this activity that used to wipe me out, you know? And I think a lot of times people forget that muscle mass also weighs something. Yeah. So although maybe your like the number on the scale hasn't changed, but maybe your body composition has. Mm-hmm.
You know, you said that you're obviously in cardiac rehab. Could you talk a little bit about how it is to work with that population of patients?
Sure. So I've worked, previously I worked in cancer rehab, and then I moved to New York and now I work in cardiac rehab, and I do notice some differences in terms of motivation. I noticed that the cancer patients were kind of just intrinsically motivated, you know, really cared about doing the exercise, would show up even if they were exhausted. And then now that I work in cardiac rehab, it's a lot more, I think, of the lifestyle habits that are maybe the reason that they're here in the first place. And so it's more about changing those lifestyle, whether it's your diet, your exercise, mm-hmm. just your habits at home. So those, I'd say those are the biggest differences. And then also having to find ways to motivate the people here is also a bigger challenge.
Yeah. Kim, who, just for the listeners who might not know cardiac rehab, who makes their way to you? Like, what is that for?
So cardiac rehab is for anyone who's had, you have to have a qualifying diagnosis. So some sort of heart surgery, maybe you had a valve repair, maybe you had a stent put in because you had a heart attack. Maybe you have chronic heart failure, congestive heart failure. So some sort of cardiac related diagnosis. And it's a 2 to 3 month long program. Yeah. So, you know, long enough that we can make those changes and make that a new habit. We go through exercise, of course, but also talk about diet, stress management. How can we reduce certain risk factors for heart disease, whether that be, you know, like obesity, high blood pressure, things like that.
It's not just, we've done a, I think we've had a physical therapy episode before. We've had an occupational, and we always go through, it's not just stretching. It's not just active. There's so many components of it. And our goal by today's podcast, though, right, is that you don't have to end up at cardiac rehab.
Right.
Hopefully.
Yes. I always tell my patients when they graduate, I'm like, I never want to see you again. I would love to see you again, but on different circumstances.
Yeah.
You know, I know you've kind of touched on these, but going back to those barriers and or we can in some ways call them excuses that people might have to their ability, their inability to exercise. Right. You know, I think we're all guilty of this. Right. Yeah. Could you speak to some of those and what you hear the most?
So I think some of the biggest ones, lack of time. That's what I hear the most. I don't have time. I'm too busy. Another big one is fatigue. Or lack of energy. I'm tired at the end of the day. And then also just lack of being motivated. I'd say those are the big three barriers. I don't call them excuses because I feel like if you don't recognize that they're there, it can't be an excuse yet. So, you know, maybe you are just like a busy mom. You work all day, you come home, have to do dinner, chores, and then you do feel like there is no time. So some of the biggest ways I think to tackle the time challenge is I'll have people go throughout a day and write down what time of day did you have 5-10 minutes, you know, pinpointing what times a day we can actually make time for that. Maybe someone else can make dinner at the end of the night to give you 30 minutes of free time at home. So I feel like the time one, it's not really an excuse. You just need to find the time. Mm-hmm. And another big thing with that one, I feel like oftentimes people don't prioritize themselves. So, you know, because they focus on, I have to do this for this person. I have to do this at work. You know, when are you going to do something for yourself? And they don't make themselves a priority. So I think educating on people on, you know, this is how exercise is going to benefit you. This is something that you need for yourself. So prioritizing when, you know, they're going to make time for themselves.
Yeah. Great. Well, Kim, this has been a great conversation. You know, before we let you go, is there anything that we haven't talked about that you would really like to get that message out there to the people listening and watching?
I think if people take anything away from today, it's that anyone can do exercise and everyone should do exercise. If you're a beginner to exercise and exercise is a foreign concept to you, just start with simple things, walking, you know, squats to your chair, a wall sit, a plank, things that you don't need equipment for. You know, you can do calf raises at your desk. So, you know, starting out simple and just knowing that in the long run that those little things will add up and pay off. I also, one thing I wrote down that I do think helps keep people motivated in the long run is I like to ask my patients, what's your why? Like, why are you doing exercise? Because everyone has a reason in the first place of why exercise can benefit them or why they started, whether that be you want to keep up with your grandkids someday. You want to be independent when you're older. You know, you don't want to have your kids be there so that they can help you get up out of your chair, up out of bed. Maybe you just want to be stronger in general. Maybe you have your own personal exercise goal. You know, I want to run a 5K next year. Whatever it is, just whenever you feel like you don't have that motivation, just think, okay, what was my why or my reason for starting?
Awesome. Well, thank you, Kim, so much. We really appreciate the time. And I know we're going to have you on again to talk about some future topics.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much. It was a blast.
Well, thank you to Kim for joining us today and telling us, I think, a lot of great information about how we can move more. A lot of great information about why we need to move more too, right? It's not just about our muscles or our pant size, but there are so many things as we age. And even when we're kids and we're creating what our lifestyle will be to make us healthier and hopefully not have to see a lot of the specialists that maybe join us on this podcast. So Steve, I know I have all the excuses in the book. And I know I need to move more, and hopefully with our challenge with one another to move more, and we'll check in, we said during this month, we can maybe motivate some others to join us, and maybe they can share that with us in one way or another about how we can get ourselves moving and then maintain that.
Awesome. And I'm going to cheat and do a shameless plug all at the same time.
I like
and
that.
And say I'm going to find some tips for movement by going to Guthrie.org/engage.
Engaged.
See how I snuck that in there?
Yeah. That was really good.
All right. Until next time, and both of us will be doing a lot of moving, so maybe we'll be a little sore next time we talk.
Good thing we sit during our podcast.
Yes. All right. I'm going to get up and go take a walk.
Sounds good.